Welcome to Solder Smoke, where we talk about all things electronic and geeky. We meet on Echolink and swap ideas related to workbench radio projects. If you have any questions about this podcast or suggestions for future casts, send a note to soldersmoke@yahoo.com. Our webpage is www.geocities.com/soldersmoke. As always, have fun, melt solder, and pass along your ideas. M0HBR, M0HBR, KL7 radio.
Yeah, KL7R. KL7R on the Mendenhall Glacier, 10 miles from downtown Juneau. This is M0HBR in central London. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Bill. Man, you're up early. It's 4:45 GMT. Is that what time it is there? Over?
Yeah, that's it. I blame it on curry. Not going into the gory details. We participated in that great English tradition of Indian food last night. And it kind of, I don't know, it affected my waking up time a bit. Too much curry. How you been?
Oh, I'm a little bit under the weather. I had a rough weekend last weekend, and up late and up early for basically the whole weekend, and then the whole week, and so I, you know, when you do that, I wound up catching a little bit of a flu, so I'm probably not as upbeat as I could be, but I'm doing well enough there. Over.
Yeah, but like a good home brewer, I see your. You're continuing to melt solder, generate solder smoke, Mike. I saw your email and all the projects you've been working on. It's great. I haven't taken a look at your LT Spice model of the amp yet. I just your email just came in, and I looked at Google. Told me it was transmitted 3 minutes ago, so our timing was perfect. But it sounds like you have been getting some work done there on the bench. You're way ahead of me. I haven't melted solder at all here. I've been stuck in front of this this computer. That's the problem when you start really getting into LT Spice. It's addictive, and I've been really enjoying it. I blame you for this addiction because I had pretty much given up on Spice, having struggled with the P Spice version. But then when you sent me that model of the amplifier using LT Spice. Man, what a difference. It's really an amazing program, really easy to use. And there are tools in there that I was completely unaware of. Nick Kennedy, WA5BDU, has put together a really excellent tutorial on Spice for hams. It's on his website. I guess you could just Google WA5 Bravo Delta Uniform. And anyway, I'm going to be printing that thing out, and I'll be reading it as I ride to work on the buses of London this morning. KL7R, M0HPR.
Oh, Roger. Well, you sent me another site there. I don't know if it was that one, but you sent me another site that I'd been on before, but this guy had, like, put the new rotary encoder into a pickle, and it was he also had a little... write up on using Spice that was pretty good. Had a bunch of pointers to Spice models of transistors. Yeah, all I did was since I did so little this week because I was working so hard at work, I quickly whipped out I looked at the schematic for the warbler, the PSK31 transmitter that Dave Benson Small Wonder Labs made. And it's basically two transistors in series, and then it's got two push-pull transistors. And so I modeled them and put them in there. I didn't have a model for the TO220 final transistor, so I just used 2N2222s. And you can tell me how close it gets. I modeled it for 3.5 megahertz, so you'll have to fiddle it around to get it moved up to to 14.3. If you're interested, I wonder if you've done any modeling of your final amp or what, if you can use this. I see you're doing some other stuff with Spicer. Zero HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, KL7R and Zero HBR. Real interesting. Yeah, I've been modeling with them and with it. What I've been doing, I've been using it along with, I started out with solid state design for the radio amateur, but I've since moved on now to experimental methods, and it's a really good progression. You know, just as the one book follows the other in time, it does also follow. It's one step up, I think. Not really a big step, but an important step there. So now I'm using LT Spice sort of alongside experimental methods, and you really it's a great way to do it. The guy you mentioned for the other website, I think it was Eric KE6US. He has a great web page. I think he at one point says that LT Spice combined with experimental methods is pretty much a BSEE and a CAN for radio amateurs. I found it that way. It really is a very good way to go through and learn the material. For example, I've been trying to understand the uses and purposes of the feedback in amplifiers, you know, shunt feedback and then emitter degeneration feedback. And you really can see it in Spice. You put it in there and you can see how it controls the gain and gives you the opportunity to really set the input and output impedances. And oh man, it's really, really useful. And so I think the next step for me is probably going to be to completely redesign the amplifier chain in my little 20 meter double sideband transceiver. And I've been doing it. I'm horrified by the way I have been doing it, because it's been hit and miss. It's been sort of like take this bit of a schematic from one rig and slap it in there and see if it works and fiddle with it. And now that, you know, when you understand what goes into the design and you have the LT Spice model on the computer, you could do it with a whole lot more precision and know what the output's going to look like before you ever even get close to the PC board. So I think that's the next step. I'll probably just redo the amplifier chain in the 20 meter DSB rig and try to get 4 or 5 watts out on 20, and that'll be fun. Anyway, that's the probably the next step. But yeah, really great stuff. Oh, and I just wanted to mention something else. We were talking about the books. I think last time we were talking about the price we paid for solid state design for the radio amateur. I think you paid $7 for yours. I think I paid $12 for mine. Well, that book is just about getting worn out. I'm happy to say it's been through, I think, about 4 or 5 countries, a couple of floods, a lot of tropical humidity, and the thing is starting to fall apart. So I took out some transparent tape and sort of redid the binding on it just to hold it together a while longer. Did the same thing with QRP Classics, which I think is another really good book in this area from ARRL. So I sort of did a rebinding on both of them, which is good because it gives them more of a homebrew appearance, even on the cover. yeah, so tell me more about this amp, the Warbler amp. You're not getting into Warblers, are you? You're getting into PSK31, a KL7R and Zero HBR.
Yeah, Bill. Well, actually, I've been into PSK and sound card modes for basically since I got back into ham radio. Past 3 years, I've really been into sound card modes. If you haven't ever done that, that's really a lot of fun. I really enjoy. Well, you like talking. I like Morse code and I like weak signal communication and that kind of fits in with MFSK and PSK. But anyway, if you go to smallwonderlabs.com, or even if you go to the AMQRP Club, the PSK80, the Warbler, is a single sideband radio on 3.579 megahertz, and it's basically, I think that's the color burst frequency. It's one of the television frequencies. So anyway, 3.579, 3580, and that's there's a lot of activity around 3580 when the sunspot cycle gets down. And anyway, I just happened to be looking at that, and it looked like a really clean amp, and kind of fits right in with your double sideband rig. This thing uses two crystals to kind of make it a single. Well, actually, five crystals to make it a single sideband rig. It two in the transmit chain, and then three in the receive chain, if I read this right. The amp still would work for you, and I think it's about 5 watts out. It uses two TO220 type transistors, like CV transistors. But I couldn't find any SPICE models for these transistors, so I tried taking a 2N2222 SPICE model and hacking the beta and hacking the current gain, the current max current it could handle, and putting it in there, and I finally just settled for all 2N2222s. You can figure it out. You probably actually use it. I won't actually use it. I just put it in there. It uses two trifilar wound transformers, which is basically just a little bit more complexity than the two winding transformers. So that's that. Yeah. So you don't have you done much DS-CAN, or does that interest you at all? I've used a lot of sound card stuff. I've used TSK, MFSK. I've used a WSJT Meteor Scatter and made Meteor Scatter contacts on 6 meters to Anchorage. I love sound card modes. They're over.
I think you're right about my preferences in ham radio. I've tried it. I'm attracted to it. There's things that I think are really interesting about it. The whole low power aspect of it. It's very intriguing. But a while back, a friend of mine in Ireland, EIACL, Mike, and I tried it, and we both decided that it just wasn't for us. For some reason, it just didn't click with me, the PSK31. So it may be that maybe because I'm doing email at work all day, and the whole keyboard thing just doesn't get me interested that much. But it's certainly technically intriguing. Well, you mentioned the color burst crystals, 3579. I'm well familiar with those. I have a big bag of them sitting here on the shelf. That's the frequency that Doug DeMaul used for the crystal filter in his Bare Bones or Barbados Super Hat receiver, the first Super Hat that I built, and it uses the color burst crystals. And what you do is you buy a big bag of them, and then you just go through them, and you find a smaller batch that are close in frequency and have sort of the right parameters, and you put them in there. Now, the danger of this, of course, is that you have a receiver that has its IF in a very popular portion of the ham band, so you have to pay attention to the bandpass filtering at the front end of the receiver. Now, when I first built mine, it didn't have enough bandpass filtering at the front end, so I was trying to listen to 20 meters, and all these 80-meter CW signals were coming through also. And the worst thing was it was close to, I think, one of the W1AW frequencies, and W1AW was strong, so I was getting, as I was trying to listen to 20-meter CW, I was also getting code practice from W1AW. So, anyway, a little bit more filtering at the front end took care of that. But, Well, the LT Spice, the other thing I was pleased with this week was that there's been quite a bit of discussion of LT Spice on the QRPL list. I guess this gets us into our QRP news segment. But that's where I found out about Nick Kennedy's tutorial. But the folks on the QRPL list have been discussing it quite a bit, which is great. Because you know, the more discussion of home brewing and design on the list and on the internet, the better. What else was I going to mention? A couple people have asked us to post things that we've discussed on the net. So I posted the LT Spice model of one of the amplifiers that we discussed last time. I put that on the blog portion of our Solder Smoke website, and also posted the spreadsheet that I've been using. Although the spreadsheet now seems like ancient history, it seems like old, forgotten technology. Because when you start using LT Spice, I think the spreadsheets are kind of put on the shelf or left in the hard drive or whatever. But anyway, those two things are posted on the blog. And our blog is up. We have a blog, a Solder Smoke blog. It's just, if you scroll down to the blog portion of our website, I'll put some information on this on the message that I put out to the QRPL group about this episode, so they'll be able to find it. But the blog also contains the spreadsheet and the LT Spice model that we've been discussing. And I'll post the Warbler amp LT Spice model that you just discussed. You know, as far as transistors in LT Spice goes, at one point I had trouble finding the 2N2222. So I just put in a generic NPN transistor, and then later on I just clicked in, I just wrote in 2N2222, and it changed the generic NPN to a 2N2222. So you might want to try that with the transistor you're looking for. The model may be lurking somewhere there in the software. Well, let's see. Okay, let me swing it back to you. KL7R, M0HBR.
Yeah, Roger, Bill. I actually haven't been to our blog yet. You put all that up there, and I haven't actually looked at it, so I'm going to have to take a look at that and see what all you got there. I haven't done any blogging. That's a whole, as was the case with podcasting, I haven't done any blogging, so you're on the bleeding edge there as far as all that goes. Well, cool. Let's see, what else have I been doing? My wife and I had our honeymoon, and it turned out it was on the same day as the ham club meeting where they had prime rib and everything, but we were going out to dinner, and so I couldn't make the ham club meeting, but we sent in our dues with a friend of mine, and he took the club meeting dues in, and club dues in, and lo and behold, my wife won the grand prize, which was like a $150 gift certificate, and so she just handed it to me, and I ordered an Arrow antenna, satellite 440 and 220, 440 and 2 meter antenna. And some RG 174 and a butane soldering iron. And that butane soldering iron is really cool. It heats up in like 10 seconds and it gets really hot. I'm looking at it here. I don't know the company name, but they sell it there at AES. Really really cool. That's a useful tool, by the way. So runs a half an hour on a charge of butane. They've got another one that runs like an hour and 20 minutes on a charge of butane. And so be good for working on antennas. Anyway, I built a diplexer for the Arrow antenna, and that was working well. I had a couple of plans. I had one for making a diplexer out of links of coax, and it's like hardline coax. And I was going to make one. I still have the micro hardline coax, and I haven't made one out of that. But I basically whipped together this little diplexer. It's a low pass filter for 2 meters and a high pass filter for 440. And when you key down on either band, the filters present a horrible impedance. Nothing like 50 ohms to the coax, and so all you see is the antenna you want to see. You don't see the antenna you don't want to see. So that was working. Still haven't made a contact with it on satellite yet, but I'd done some of that. Looking forward to some geek action there, pointing the satellite at the sky with my handy talkie there, and making the neighbors wonder. M0HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, I know what you mean. We'll have to do a satellite show one day, Mike. I was thinking we should do a satellite show and then maybe a boat anchors show. But I know what you mean about stirring up the concern of neighbors. I have to be particularly careful about that. When I was in the Dominican Republic, working at the U.S. Embassy, I was also in my spare time communicating with astronaut Norm Thagard up on Mir Station, on the Russian Mir Space Station. And I had spoken to Norm several times on 2-meter FM voice. And I noticed at one point that there was going to be several good passes right around lunchtime. Of course, I was working, but I figured, well, I'll just throw my 2-meter handy-talkie in my briefcase, and off I went. And at the appropriate moment at lunchtime, I stepped out of the back of the U.S. Embassy and walked out, set it out to the backyard. They had some tennis courts there, and I was listening for Mir, and I thought to myself, you know, if somebody asks me what I'm doing, and I tell them that I'm waiting to communicate with a Russian spaceship, well, either they're gonna lock me up for one thing or another. But I managed to I didn't make the contact, you know, and I wasn't arrested, so I guess it all worked out okay. Yeah, well, 440, you know, I was going to mention that. That's way beyond my normal frequency range, but I'm still playing with my kids' Christmas toys. And one of the things that my son got was a neat pair of, I guess they're FRS or Family Radio Service, walkie-talkies. And they're not in the 440. I don't think they're in the 440 band, but they're close to it. They're around 70 centimeters, and man, they work great. These are neat little things. We've been through half a dozen sets of toy walkie-talkies, and they're all usually just junk, but these things are pretty good. They got a neat charger, and you know, they're pretty standard. I guess the same company in China is probably making all the different brands and just slapping different labels on them, but they're great. And so we've been using them Even in the concrete canyons of central London. They work pretty well. So I'll go off to the store and I'll put one of these in my pocket and I'll be talking to him as I go along. Fine on your diplexer. I always say diplexer, but again, I'm a sort of HF guy, so I'll go with your pronunciation of it. I think you're probably right. That's a neat, simple technology, but you guess you gotta have it there to operate in that mode. And the butane soldering iron, that sounds cool. I mean, you know, I find myself, and I'm sure many of our listeners do the same thing, watching some of these DIY shows on the Discovery Channel. For a while there, I told you we were watching a guy building a boat, and then we were watching a guy building an airplane, and then a helicopter, and it's just the interesting part, I think, is the tools. When the guy pulls out this really neat tool and starts, you know, cutting the wood precisely as he wants to cut it, it's all strangely, for some reason, very interesting. And anyway, maybe we'll do a ham radio version of that. I suppose we are here in a certain sense. We just need the video now, Mike. I guess that's the next step, video podcasting. Well, I haven't done any blogging either, except for this our blog there. It's all very simple. I think if anybody wants to just come down and post a comment or something, they can just write it in there. They might have to register or something, although that seems like a bit of a hassle. Some of these blogs you don't have to register at all, but with the R Media, I think you might have to, so it might this might make it a little bit more difficult, but I hope not. And I hope people will stop by and leave some comments there. Back to you, KL7R, M0HBR.
All right, Bill. Well, I missed what you said there. Is maybe that was maybe you were correcting my pronunciation of diplexer. I have no idea how you're supposed to say it. I know that there's a difference between a diplexer and a duplexer. I'm not much of a VHF or UHF guy. I just knew I needed one for this antenna, and I had the schematic scoped out, and it worked. But yeah, duplexers are for like repeaters, and they allow you to run full duplex on channels that are closely spaced in the same band. Diplexer basically allows you to transmit into antenna on one frequency and have the other antenna attached to the same piece of coax not affect the first one. And since 2 meters and 440 are harmonically related, they do kind of mess with each other a little bit. I fought that before, so. I wisely, when I went down to the States about a year ago now, I bought a diplexer from AES, and I have it in my drawer here. And I said, whenever I get an aero antenna, I'm going to plug it in. Well, I forgot that this one here had UHF connectors instead of BNC, so gave me an opportunity to build one, so I did. You know, Bill, I have been working on something I know that just bores you to tears, but I've been working really hard on it. I've been working on PIC programming, and there's a board out by the AMQRP Club called the Pickle Board, and it's it's for the PIC Elmer course. And there is no frequency counter for it, and I started to build a frequency counter for the Pickle Board, and I posted it to the Pickle Yahoo group, and made a couple of changes to it, and kind of got stuck, reached the limit of my abilities. But Craig AA0ZZ kind of picked it up, and he's been hacking on it. He got it converted from a regular 16F84 over to a more modern chip. And he got it kind of working. It isn't really working, but it's kind of working, and that's kind of where I made it to. But he made it another angle. So I'm hoping that one of these days we can have something that works there, and a frequency counter for the Pickle. I don't know if any of that interests you at all there. M0HBR, KL7R. Anyway, that's what I've been working on a lot, and I'm kind of burnt out on it. I'm ready to get back to projects that actually I can finish over.
No, it's very interesting. It doesn't bore me at all, but it's just, frankly, I think it's beyond me. I mean, I find myself wandering into the digital world and the programmable chips and things like that. You see all these neat things they can do. I was just this week looking at some guys selling beacon boards, little tiny beacon boards to generate the CW for beacons. And he wants $30 for them, so I think I might get one, because I've played with beacons on 10 meters. And so I might pick up one of those. I have the transmitter, but I've been, because of my lack of ability in this area, Mike, the way I've been generating the CW, I'm ashamed to say, is with an old 486 computer that I have here, that I have the Ralph Taggart, the guy who writes all those wonderful books about SSTV and WeatherSats and everything. He wrote a great Morse program. And I wrote to him and I said, hey, listen, I want to use this to do a beacon. And he wrote right back. He said, okay, stand by a second. I'll modify the program so you can do a beacon. And the next day I found in my email a program from him. He had custom made it so I could use it for beacon purposes. But I know there's got to be a better way. And if I was better or if I had any abilities in this area, I'd probably be able to do something. But I think I might just, outsource this one and buy somebody else's work. I think you said $8 max. So yeah, that might be it. I'd like to be able to get the beacon going with the solar panel and just leave it there and sort of when the sun hits it, it'll transmit. But no, congratulations. And one of these days, I'll dive into the Pickle Elmer program. But you know, you said you get frustrated with it and then you back away. That's my experience. Every time I get involved in the software, for one moment of madness, I thought over the Christmas break I would take my wife's computer and upgrade it from I think she's got Windows 2000 on it and put I think I would bring it into the world of XP because you know it's kind of clunky with the old software. But then a moment later I just said, no, wait a second, no, don't do this. There's too much pain involved. Just buy a new computer, you know, when she needs one. But so I kind of find myself backing away from the ones and zeros. the analog stuff is, I think it's certainly easier to figure out what's going on and get it working. Hey, I wanted to mention, I got to mention this, it's totally unrelated to ham radio, but I'm sure everybody was hearing about the whale that came up the River Thames, and that was the big event here on Saturday. I mean, I'm sitting right now approximately 1 kilometer, 0.6 miles from the River Thames, and if you go down my street, right down at the end of the street, there's the Battersea Bridge that goes across the Thames. And on Saturday, a big, big whale came up the Thames, 40 miles up the Thames, and crossed under that bridge. And my wife, early Saturday morning, said, let's go watch the whale. So we got the kids dressed, and we grabbed the binoculars and the video camera and headed down there. And I thought we weren't going to see the thing, but as soon as we got to the water, you know, the typical thing where the whale comes out of the water and water spout comes up and everything else, right there in the Thames River, amazing. It was really really something to see. I think you heard the whale died. They couldn't get it out to sea fast enough or something. But so my kids were all upset about that. But it was, I think, a once in a century. Event, and we got to see it. So that's the nature news from Central London this week, Mike. KL7R N0HBR.
Roger, Bill. Yeah, it's kind of sad, but they're heavy critters, you know. It's kind of hard to pick them up to where they can breathe, and then they, you know, a lot of times when they do something crazy like beach themselves, they're already sick, you know. So I don't know if that was the case with that fella, but that's cool you got to see them. We have lots of whales around Juneau, and when I grew up, where I grew up around Anchorage, they have a lot of beluga whales, and they sometimes will beach themselves. So that's cool. Let's see, as far as the keyer, K1EL.com. If you go to K1EL.com, he has a beacon chip, an IDEAR chip, like I think it's called a KID. And it can't be more than $9. He'll custom program it for you with your call sign and about six different strings it'll send depending on what pin you raise high on the chip, a little 8-pin chip. And I bought a bunch of stuff from K1EL. You can't hardly spend more than $10 at the site. So he's great. And KD1JV, Steve Weber has got a keyer. I don't know. His isn't a beacon, but he's charging like $3 for his. So I wouldn't expect you'd have to spend $30. I go to that K1EL, and I could probably program up one. It would probably take me more effort than you sending $9. But M0HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, well, thanks for the info there, Mike. Yeah, I'll pick up one of these chips. I don't think I can do unattended 10-meter repeaters here. I think that's against the rules in the UK. But I used to leave this thing on at other places, and it was great fun because I would, in the beacon message, I would ask people to send me an email. So, you know, you'd leave it on, And all of a sudden you'd come back and you'd always be checking the email box, hoping that you'd get an email back from someplace exotic. It's sort of like, you know, hands-free DXing. And, oh, that's great fun. I think that's good. I'm really interested in the whole balloon thing. I'd like to send a balloon up one day. I was amazed to find that you're allowed to do that from the UK. There was an article of some folks who did it. I don't think it probably wouldn't be a good idea to launch from central London, since I'm in the final approach to the Heathrow, and we have planes going over just about every 45 seconds. But I think if we got out of town a little bit, we could probably do a balloon. I want to do that one day. Just get involved in the balloon launch and put together the payload and send that up. So, good stuff. Speaking of things flying in the air, I guess this is our science segment for the week. But my kids and I watched the return of the Stardust, a capsule, the spaceship that they sent out to the comet Wild. I think they call it Wild. And they gathered the stardust and had the thing come back and land right on the spot in Utah, and that was pretty cool. I mean, we were watching them online from NASA TV. The whole thing was just really neat. And I said to some colleagues at work, I mean, what an achievement, you know? They don't get enough credit or enough applause. But when you think about that, you launch this thing out into space, goes, collects the required dust, and lands back in Utah at the precise location and moment that you wanted to. That's pretty good. All this talk about the Academy Awards and the Golden Globes and everything else, and everybody's applauding and cheering for these folks, and an accomplishment like that gets maybe one little line on the science section of Yahoo. It doesn't seem fair. I'll turn it over to you, and then I guess we could do solder smoke mailbag. I remember HCJB used to have listeners' mailbag. I used to listen to that wonderful shortwave station from Quito, Ecuador. They used to have some great program about ham radio, and then they had, I think they called it BX Mailbag or something like that, and they would read the mail from people. So I'll just mention some of the email that we've been getting. But let me first turn it back over to Juno. We should also tell people what time it is for both of us here. I'll look at my watch here. For me, it's Monday, the 23rd of January. It's 5:23 in the morning, which is also 05:23 at Greenwich Mean Time. Greenwich being right down the road a bit. Back to you, Mike. KL7R, M0HBR.
Yeah, M0HBR, KL7R. Yeah, I watched that reentry. Actually, I watched the replay of it. I got up in the morning kind of early, and I saw the replay. It was just really cool that they could track that thing coming in, and it was supposed to be the fastest reentry. I forget what they said. Something like 22,000 miles an hour. Does that sound about right? It's just a whaling speed coming in, and they it landed in the desert, and the helicopter went over and picked it up. And what I thought was cool is that it had cubes of, I think they call it aerogel foam. It's rock you can see through. That's like a foam, super lightweight, and they're making super capacitors out of that same material. 10 farad and 50 farad capacitors at like 2 volts out of that same material. I'd like to have a little bit of that to look at. But that's interesting that stuff would collect interstellar dust and cosmic dust. Some people work harder for the money than others, but I don't think they'd have it any other way. But as far as HCJB, that brought up a really pleasant memory. When I was going to college, we'd work out in the bush of Alaska, and one of the places in the bush was Alakanuk, which was on the west coast, west of Bethel, north of Dillingham, that place in the middle of nowhere. Anyway, we had really good propagation. We were out there. We had a little vertical stuck in the tundra, and And one story about that is that we kept getting into the Moravian Church's speakers, and they sent over the constable thinking we were Russian spies. We both showed him our ham radio license, and it turned out we weren't Russian spies. But anyway, we would talk. There was hams running at HCJB, and there was this lady ham, and we talked to her night after night there for a period of a couple of weeks from Alakanuk, and really a pleasant memory. We kind of Alakanuk, like at that time, Alaska was four time zones, and right now it's only one time zone. And I don't know if I said, but it's 8:26 here in the evening, the day before you just said. But anyway, we were four time zones, and we were out in the fourth time zone, and so all the people in the West Coast, all the California kilowatts had gone to sleep, and we kind of owned the Pacific at that time, and we had this pipeline into the West Coast of South America, and it was a really pleasant memory. Anyway, back to you there, Bill. Tell us about the mailbag. I've gotten a few here, but I'm sure you've gotten most of them. N0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, N0HBR. Yeah, HCJB. Well, an important place for ham radio, too, because I don't know if you've heard the story, but I'm told that that was the place where quad antennas were invented, and legend has it, I think it's true, I think it's a true story, that the because of the altitude they were having with the Aggies, they were having a lot of problems with the coronal arcing off the ends of the Aggies. So to solve that problem, they developed a quad so there'd be no high voltage nodes off the end to take care of the coronal arcing at high power. They just wrapped it around, and thus the quad was born. So I think all users of quad antennas owe a debt to the engineers, probably the ham radio engineers there at HCJB. Anyway, that brings us to Solder Smoke Mailbag. Let's see, who do we get mail from this week? Don, KG4TQE, sends a note, and he says he's looking for a copy of A Solid State Design for the Radio Amateur. I think he's searching eBay and other online sources. Good luck to him. If anybody has an extra copy, get in touch with Don. I'm sure he'd appreciate it. They're hard to get. I mean, it's a shame. It's such a great book. I could certainly use a new copy, but I think they are kind of hard to find, so we wish Don luck. Jim, KA0IQT, lets us know that he's been listening. Bill, N7MFB, is also a listener and tells us that he's involved in converting bacon bits to audio, and we discussed some of the challenges of making audio files, especially when the files get kind of large. Good luck to Bill, and that's great for doing that conversion work. I'm sure a lot of the folks who can't read bacon bits will really appreciate having the audio files available. And and finally, Bill, K2RXQ, sends a note and asks us to post some of the websites that we mentioned during the show. And well, we're following up on your recommendation, Bill, and that's why we're putting this stuff on the blog, make it easier to get to, and so more useful for the listeners. But that's it on the mail. I had an idea, and I'll mention this in this segment. And folks who are listening on the on their iPods or MP3 players, they all have little voice recorders in there. So if you get a moment, and you're listening to us in some exotic location or not so exotic location, if you're down in the Tokyo subway or driving across the outback in Australia or any place, why don't you just record us a little segment with your record feature there on the MP3 player, and then email it to us, and we'll put it into the program. How's that? That might be fun. Instead of just mail, we'll get the audio files and put them on the program. Yeah, let's see. Well, Mike, we've been rambling on, and I know you're under the weather, so I think we're getting to the point where we have a very large audio file, but we've covered a lot of territory. It's been a lot of fun, and I hope the listeners enjoy it. But I'll turn it back to you, KL7R, M0HBR.
Excellent, Bill. and your lamp served duty there today with a clang. That was hilarious. Soon to be a standard feature of solder smoke. I think we ought to wind her down here today, Bill. Nice talking to you. You know, whenever I get an upset stomach like that, either oatmeal or toast. You might make a batch of that really good Irish oatmeal and wash it down with some milk there, and hopefully you can get some rest before work today. Have a good day at work. Talk to you next time. M0HBR, 7R.
Okay, Mike. Yeah, the British believe in medicinal properties of toast and tea. All ailments can be helped with tea and toast. So I think I'll be all right. Hey, good talking to you. Good one, and keep in touch. And see you next week. 7-3 and 7-3 to all our listeners from London. KL7R and 0HBS.